Crystal and Len, welcome to SBS Hindi Radio.
Look, thanks for inviting us to speak. It's a great pleasure being here.
Thanks, Amit.
Crystal and Len, in the past few years, we have seen many researches on camel ears and hawkers in Australia. But one of the confusing points to laymen is that these are two different traits, or they kind of confuse, you know, camel ears with hawkers and hawkers with camel ears. Does that happen often?
Well, what the difference is the camel ears were controlled by blokes like Abdul Wadi, very wealthy men who imported indentured labourers who were brought out here and paid a pittance, and they worked, and when they were finished, they sent them back and they brought out more. They also imported their camels, and they all come from through the port of Karachi. The hawkers, they were mainly Sikhs and Muslims, but coming from the Punjab. The hawkers come from the northwest provinces of what is now Pakistan, Peshawar, and those sort of places. So there's quite a different ethnic separation, and there's also a different social separation, because the hawkers were, in the main, retired soldiers, and as did the sons of wealthy farmers who come out to Australia to increase the wealth, to buy more land in Australia, where the camel ears, they came out here and they were paid a pittance, and when they went back to India and other places, they just had the clothes on their back and a little more exploited badly.
I recently did a story on Mangu Khan. Do you think he was a camel ear?
Amit, no, he was not a camel ear at all. In the National Archives, he is listed as in 1916 as an Indian hawker, a British subject from India who was a Muslim. And he actually lived in one Providence place just off Little Lonsdale Street in Melbourne, Victoria. And he hawked around the Ballarat district and Ararat and around that area. So he was not a camel ear, he was an Indian hawker. He may have travelled on foot and gone up there by train. There's no evidence of him having a wagon at this stage, but he may have had a wagon.
What was the life of camel ears like in Australia during those mid-1850s onwards to 1920s?
Well, it'd be a bit later than the 1850s, but it was a dire of life. It was absolutely terrible. But what you've got to remember is that nearly all the camel ears were Indians, not Afghanistans, but they were brilliant bushmen. And this is overlooked. They were given a string of camels and they had to go through the bush walking. They didn't ride the camels, they led the camel, the lead camel and all the others were tied nose to tail, and they had their own salt refiners for salt water in the lakes and soaks and that sort of thing. And they lived out in the bush, off the bush, for 3 or 4 months at a time. They rarely come into town. When they went into the towns like Bourke and Oondedatta and those places, there were mosques there for them. But they were very primitive. But they were totally exploited, and they barely had enough to live. There was, and if they were tied to the person who imported them, like their own countrymen in a lot of occasions, had them under a contract. And if they broke their contract because of the poor working conditions, the police arrested them and threw them in jail, and they were only allowed to return to their owner or the indenture, who then exploited them even more. And it was terrible. The no Australian would work under or live under the conditions that the camel ears lived under.
So were there any legal battles fought by these camel ears, or did they organise themselves as a union?
No, they weren't in the union. It was funny, the Abdul Wade and Gunny Khan from Broken Hill, they employed camel ears and they tried to join the union, but the union wouldn't accept them. And to Australia's disgrace, the union movement, the political movement, didn't take on the cause of the camel ears and try and improve their working conditions. All that they wanted to do was to close the camel ears down, and so that Australians could take over their jobs, but it would have been uneconomical and almost impossible for Australians to do. But you've got to take your hat off to the Cameleers. The work that they did in opening up Australia was totally brilliant, and it has gone unheralded, except like for the Ghan Railway and the Overland Telegraph. But when you get down to the nitty-gritties, the Cameleers were the real bushmen of the outback.
My last question is that how did the exploitation of camel ears finally ended? Were there any particular circumstances that we don't see camel ears anymore, or we don't hear about them, say, in the early half of 20th century?
Well, no, there were camel ears around in the early half of the 20th century. And what happened, the camel ears used to take their goods when the river boats were started, and the inland river system was one of the biggest in the world, and the Cameleers would take the their goods that they collected from the outback stations to the riverboat ports, and then when the railways were introduced, then they took them to their railheads, and then what brought about the demise of the majority of the hawkers was the introduction of motor vehicles that were capable of driving through outback conditions. But it wasn't a quick death, it was a very slow death. We had hawkers on the beach at Portland collecting shell grit for poultry industry, and that happened all along the coast. There were salt mines in Oyen in the 1920s and 40s that Cameleers worked on, so it was a very slow demise.
Are there any other Cameleers today living in the bush outback somewhere who are carrying on the trade?
There's some novelty and tourist organisations and the odd fossica for minerals and that sort of thing, but on the whole, no, they've died right out. Descendants of them, but yeah, that have lived in naturalised Australia, or born in Australia, they've become Australians.
Crystal, is there any particular incident involving Cameleers that come to your mind right now that you would like to share with our audience?
Well, yes, I've got a very pet favourite subject, and it's about the first Australian woman who was a Cameleer and married two Indians that were Cameleers.
One at a time.
She didn't marry them at the same time. One died, the first one died, and then the second one she went to Mecca with in 1927. So she would be the first Australian woman to become a Muslim and have three children to an Indian husband, and then he died, and then the second husband and her went to the Hajj in Mecca. She was actually a Cameleer herself, and she went out with the camels with her children and her husband out through Unadatta and Alice Springs and all those places. So she's a real favourite of mine because it brings in the Australian aspect and the interaction of Indians. For an Australian woman to be able to marry two different Indian men and have children and still... And the other thing, she became a well-known author and used to publish in the Register newspaper, and she's had books written about her. She also went to Afghanistan to be a governess for the king and queen there, for their children.
Afghanistan.
Yeah, in Afghanistan. She'd been to India three times, and she was actually a correspondent or reporter for the Register at one time.
Adelaide Register.
Thank you for speaking to SBS Hindi.
Oh, thank you for inviting us on your program.